smacked his lips at the sight of the money, no doubt dreaming of all the whiskey it would buy. His eyes flicked between the money to Jack. He sighed.
I don't know who. I didn't see their faces.
Where were you?
Like I said, here and there. I don't remember specifically.
When?
Earlier this week? Tuesday? Wednesday, maybe?
What did you hear exactly?
Christ almighty, Chief, ain't that enough?
You either give me the names of who was talking, or you tell me exactly what they said. Fred picked at the mole on the side of his nose, staring at the money.
They think having Eddie in their organization will keep you from coming down on them.
They who? You need to give me a name.
Can't do that, Chief.
Jack handed $120 to Fred. Fred scowled.
A single Jackson is hardly incentive to keep telling you stuff.
Well, maybe this will incentivize you to pay better attention and tell me more. Jack held two more 20s between his thumb and forefinger. Fred stared out the window of the car and nodded.
You know, it's coming back to me now.
What is?
Where I might have been.
Jack waited.
Now, I ain't sure of it. Might have got my days mixed up, but sometimes I sleep in the cabs of DI trucks.
Doyle Industries?
I ain't saying that name. Plausible deniability in case someone tries to torture a confession out of me.
Jack drummed his fingers on the steering wheel. So if I'm hearing you right, Kyle Grant talked to someone in DI's truck yard earlier this week about not trusting my brother.
That's about the sum of it.
Fred reached for the money, but Jack pulled it back. They talk about anything else? Mention anyone else by name? Fred dropped his head back on the headrest and stared at the ceiling. He closed his eyes and said,
They mentioned setting up a meeting with the Pedrozas to talk truce.
Jack peeled $120 and handed it to him. Was Kyle talking to a man or a woman? Fred took the money and sighed dramatically.
You gonna pay for my funeral when I turn up dead?
No one's going to kill you, Fred. Tell me what I want to know, and I'll give you all of this money, and I'll pay to have your shoes resold. Fred held out his hand and wiggled his fingers for the remaining 20.
A woman.
Jack held out the last bill. Michelle Ryan. Fred nodded once and took the Jackson. He removed his fedora and put the money in the inner band and settled it back on his head. He started to get out of the car, but Jack put the car in gear and drove.
What are you doing?
Fred said. Taking you to jail.
What? After all I gave you?
I throw you in the drunk tank, no one will think you're an informant, will they? Come sleep in the jail cell for a few hours. I'll bring you a burger and a new pair of shoes.
Don't want a new pair. Want these resold.
If I bring you a pair of shoes, will you wear them while I get yours fixed?
You'd do that for me?
Of course. Fred settled back in the seat.
I suppose.
Jack turned onto Main Street and drove through the square to the city hall. When he stopped the car, he turned around and said, One more question.
You don't give up, do you?
Did Joe Doyle's name ever come up in the conversation between Kyle and Michelle?
No, not once.
Jack should have been excited about finally getting a connection between Doyle's legitimate businesses and his drug business, but all he could think about was his brother's involvement in it all. As Jack ushered Fred to the holding cell and promised to bring him food later in the day, one thought was running through the back of his mind. It's time to see how serious Eddie is about going straight. Chapter 6. Eddie McBride was sitting at the kitchen table drinking Dr. Pepper from a giant Whataburger cup and checking email on his phone when his brother came home. Jack looked like shit. Pale, dark circles under his eye, his tie loosened, his collar unbuttoned. It was weird, disturbing to see his brother look like a drunk coming home from a bender, like he was living in some alternate universe where Eddie was the responsible one, where Eddie cleaned up messes Jack made. Sure, Stillwater was different than most towns, but it wasn't that out of whack with reality. Eddie watched as Jack made coffee as quietly as possible.
"Hey, man, brought you some taquitos," Eddie said.
Jack's brow furrowed. "You in Yorkville this morning?"
"Had a hankering for taquitos. Sleep at the station again."
Jack filled the coffee urn with water in silence. He placed the empty glass urn on the burner and clicked the pot on. "You off to work?"
"In a minute," Eddie said.
Jack sat at the table and fished a taquito out of the bag. He unwrapped one and took a bite. After he swallowed, he said, "We need to talk."
"About?"
"Your boss. Your job. Why'd you go to work for Joe Doyle of all the businesses in the county?"
"I saw their now hiring sign. I stopped in and Matt hired me on the spot. The day Julie returned to the loving bosom of her family, as a matter of fact. I didn't even know who Joe Doyle was. Barely know him now. Why?"
Jack ate the taquito in three bites. He wiped his mouth with a napkin and reached for another. "I find it interesting my brother, who's been in and out of trouble with drugs for his entire life, so happens to go to work for the biggest drug lord in York County." Eddie laughed.
"Joe Doyle's a drug lord? I don't buy it."
"Why'd you go to work there?"
"I told you why."
"I don't believe you." Eddie lifted his hands in surrender.
"I don't know what to tell you. Besides, I've never seen anything illegal going on."
"They're good. You being on their payroll gives them another layer of protection."
"How do you figure?"
"They think I'll go easy on them to save you." Eddie laughed.
"They don't know you very well."
"I bailed you out when you rode into town, driving 80 with a gram in your pocket. If I didn't know better, I'd think you did it on purpose." Eddie glared at his brother when what he wanted to do was smile. Jack was a damn fine cop.
"I'll quit then. If Doyle is involved in drugs, I don't want to be involved. I get another strike and I'm going down for 20 years. Maybe Ellie will hire me as a barista."
"You're not quitting, D.I.
"Make up your mind, dude."
"You're going to let Joe Doyle reel you into his operation like a marlin. Make him work for it, but give in the end." Shock threw Eddie back into his chair.
"You're asking me to work for you against the Doyles?"
"Yes."
"Wow."
Eddie's phone buzzed with a message. He swept it off the table and turned it off before Jack could see who it was from. Jack didn't seem to notice.
"You trust me to do it?"
"I don't have any choice."
"That's a vote of confidence."
Jack leaned across the table, his bloodshot eyes blazing with determination. "This is where you make good on all the shit you've done the last 20 years. Pay me and Mom back for bailing your sorry ass out of jail over and over. You help me bring Joe Doyle and his organization down, or you ride out of town right now."
"Why do you want to take this guy down so bad?"
Jack sat back. "It's my job," he said, voice filled with incredulity at the question. Eddie knew there was more to it, but didn't press. He didn't want to push his luck and change Jack's mind.
"I'll do it on one condition."
"You are hardly in a position to negotiate."
"I am anyway." "Pull yourself together, man. You look awful."
"I'm fine." His voice was clipped, dismissive.
"Have you looked in the mirror lately?"
"You were always the mirror hog, not me." Eddie ignored the jab.
"I know you like it here and want to stick around, but these people are watching you. After all the shit with Freeman, they don't trust you.
You looking like you're a walking ghost doesn't help.
Jack stood and took his time making himself a cup of coffee. He turned around and leaned against the counter. Jack sipped his drink, but kept his eyes on his brother. Who's trying to call you?
You noticed, huh?
Jack raised his eyebrows and waited.
It was a text, and don't worry, it's nothing illegal.
Eddie stood.
I have to go.
At the door, Jack caught Eddie's arm. This is just between us. No one else knows. Julie walked in the kitchen wearing running clothes and made a beeline for the coffee.
Morning.
Morning, the brothers said in unison. Julie poured her coffee.
Eddie, isn't it about time you got your own place?
He can stay here as long as he wants, Jack said. Julie replaced the pot on the warmer, picked up her cup, and turned to the brothers with a forced smile.
Of course he can. I figured he would want to have a place of his own to entertain his girlfriend.
Thanks for being so concerned about my social life, Jules.
Pebbles of ice ricocheted around his empty cup as he shook it. Eddie walked over to Julie, who leaned against the sink. He stared down at her with a knowing private smile.
Excuse me.
She stepped aside, and Eddie tossed the cup in the trash beneath the sink.
Have a nice run. I hope you trip and break your ankle.
I hope you get crushed under a crate of apples.
Eddie walked out the back door into his bike, letting the screen door bang behind him. He turned his baseball cap backward, straddled his Harley, and revved the engine, just to piss off Jules. He drove slowly down the driveway and tried to get his head around the idea that his straight-laced, rule-following brother had asked him, the family fuck-up, to spy on Joe Doyle. Instead of turning to the left and work, Eddie turned right, drove a few hundred yards, and turned left again up a steep, overgrown dirt track. Halfway up the road, he saw who he was looking for. He shut off the bike, the silence always a little shocking. He smiled at Ellie Martin.
Hey, Fabio, she said.
You know you love it.
I don't trust any man whose hair is longer than mine.
So if I cut my hair, you'll trust me?
Probably not.
Where's Amy?
Ellie jerked her thumb in the direction of the German church on the top of the hill.
She walks home down the other side. It's quicker.
How was the run?
Despite the chill November morning, Ellie wore thin running shorts and a half-marathon t-shirt from 2010. With her hair pulled back, her long neck and strong jaw were accentuated. Eddie had always been a sucker for swan-like necks, and the urge to pepper kisses up and down Ellie's had been a difficult thing to resist for the past 6 weeks.
Good, she said.
You ran before you met Amy, didn't you?
Ellie looked abashed.
Yeah, she's getting there, but she's still slow.
It was a 4-mile cooldown for you.
Pretty much,
Ellie shrugged.
I enjoy her company.
Want a ride?
She raised an eyebrow.
The last time you took me for a ride on that thing, you almost killed me.
In my defense, I didn't know where I was going, and you were a shitty navigator.
Your hair was blocking my view of the road.
Eddie nodded to the back of the bike.
I'll take you straight home, I promise. You're finished with your run, aren't you?
Yes.
Come on, this bike isn't dangerous.
She stepped forward, and Eddie knew he had her.
It's not the bike I'm worried about.
He grinned.
Smart girl.
She swung her leg over the bike and settled in as he started it. When he didn't feel her arms go around his waist, he looked behind him and saw her grasping the back of the seat.
Don't trust yourself, huh?
He revved the engine.
Shut up and drive, she yelled.
But she was grinning. He drove down the road, turned right, and passed Julie in running clothes, leaving her driveway. Eddie gave her the middle finger with a smile.
See what I saved you from?
He called over his shoulder.
Thank you.
They were at the front of her store within a minute. Ellie got off the bike and thanked him for the ride.
"Want to catch a bite to eat tonight?" Eddie said.
"I don't think so."
"Come on, Ellie. Everyone thinks we're dating anyway. Do you want to make liars out of half the town?"
"Half the town were liars before you rode in. Trust me."
"I'm going to keep asking."
"And I'm going to keep saying no."
"Oh, you have no idea how good I am at wearing women down."
She laughed. "I bet I do."
"I'm going to keep teasing you until that laugh reaches your eyes."
She tucked her chin and narrowed her eyes. Her smile faded.
"I don't need you to cheer me up, Eddie. I'm fine."
"Are you? Because my brother is miserable."
Ellie looked down the street at the stoplight.
"I'm sorry to hear it."
When she looked back at Eddie, her face was tight, her expression hardened.
"But there's nothing I can do about it."
"Maybe I can."
Ellie crossed her arms over her chest and waited.
"I've spent a lifetime getting away with shit, doing things behind people's backs," Eddie said.
"You've also gotten caught a lot."
Eddie waved his hand.
"Doesn't even scratch the surface of what I haven't been caught for."
He stood and pulled her close. She stared him in the eyes, unblinking. Anger tinged her voice when she said,
"What do you think you're doing?"
"Julia's about to run right around the corner. If you want to keep her beady little focus off of you, she needs to believe we have something going on."
"Why would she focus on me? I haven't been around Jack in weeks."
"Julia's suspicious of everyone."
He saw Julie over Ellie's shoulder. He put his hand at the base of Ellie's neck, pulled her forward, and slid his hand down to rest below the waistband of her shorts. He whispered in her ear,
"If you and Jack want to see each other, I can arrange it where no one will know."
"Oh, really? How?"
He massaged her neck and rubbed his cheek against hers.
"Well, I haven't figured it out yet."
He waved at Julie behind Ellie's back. Julie returned his middle finger from earlier and turned the other way. Ellie chuckled.
"It's tougher than you think to be devious in a small town."
"Maybe, but not impossible."
Eddie pulled her tighter, felt her tense, and tried to lean away.
"There is another option."
"For you to take your hand off my ass?"
"Take me upstairs. I'll help you forget all about Jack."
She purred and ran her hand up the back of his neck and into his hair. She gripped his hair and pulled his head back. Her eyes were dark with anger.
"I would rather gouge my eyes out with a dull, rusty spoon."
He released her and laughed.
"You're a goddamn amazing woman. The more I know you, the more I hate that bastard of a brother of mine." "But,"
Eddie shrugged and leaned back against his bike,
"Jack's the settling type. I'm not. And you need the settling type, don't you?"
"I don't need anyone."
"Aw, now, don't get all independent on me. I'd like nothing more than to steal you from Jack. And fair warning, I'm going to keep trying."
"Why?"
"'Cause deep down, you like it."
"I do not."
Eddie swung his leg over his bike.
"Yeah, you do. But don't worry, I won't tell Jack. It might send the poor guy over the edge. Keep my other offer in mind. Between you and me, I don't think Jack will make it to January."
"What do you mean?"
She stepped forward and placed a hand on Eddie's arm to keep him from starting his Harley.
"What's wrong?"
"Nothing some time alone with you won't fix."
She sighed.
"Eddie, the only way I can survive this is to not be around him."
Her expression was so naked with fear and loneliness, it took Eddie's breath away. For the first time, he saw in her what he saw daily in Jack. A steely resolve came over him. He covered her hand with his and smiled.
"Do you have a sister?"
She shook her head and forced a laugh.
"Sorry."
He lifted her chin with his finger.
"Hey, I think making the town believe we are circling each other is a good idea.
No, it's not. If Jack and I do have a future, the last thing we need is for the town to think I've fucked both brothers. Play it up to Julie, fine. But don't you dare spread it around town that we're sleeping together. Eddie held up three fingers.
Scout's honor.
She stepped back. Thanks for the ride.
Anytime.
Eddie watched her climb the stairs to her apartment until she was lost from view. He pulled out his cell phone and hit redial.
Hey, Eddie said. You won't believe the conversation I just had.
With who? Doyle?
No, my brother. He wants me to spy on Doyle for him.
There was a beat of silence on the other end of the line. Fine. Everything still runs through me.
I wasn't asking permission.
Eddie hung up and pocketed the phone.
Bastard.
He watched Ellie's light turn on in her apartment, revved his Harley, and drove down Main to work.
Chapter 7. Ellie York Martin might have been the richest woman in town in terms of historic downtown property, but Joe Doyle owned West Stillwater. Metal buildings built by Doyle Construction lined Boondoggle Road on land bought by Joe Doyle during the savings and loan bust of the 80s. With 100-year leases on the land and inexpensive metal buildings on top, Doyle lured downtown businesses, the pharmacy, the auto parts store, two florists, a mechanic, a cafe, to the Stillwater Business Park, while his four businesses and his central office anchored the park at the corner of Boondoggle and Main. Eddie drove past the two-story main office, the heavy equipment yard, the feed store, and into the parking lot of Doyle Organics. He waved at a delivery truck as it left on its run to Tyler and pulled to the rear of the small building that held Matt Doyle's tiny office. The rear yard was full of 18-wheelers delivering produce from the valley and the Houston docks, Doyle trucks loading up for daily deliveries, and a few local Fords and Chevys delivering the small amount of produce available in late fall in East Texas. In the middle of it all, Matt Doyle stood with a clipboard, checking off produce as it arrived in his warehouse and shooting the breeze with his workers. Eddie towered over Matt, as did most of his workers, but Eddie was pretty sure Matt could kick his ass if his wide shoulders, bulging biceps, and muscular legs were any indication. If Matt wasn't such a health freak, Eddie would suspect he'd juiced to get his sideshow-worthy physique. Everyone liked Matt. He was affable and honest, strict but fair. He was a shrewd businessman, but a horrible judge of character who believed the best in everyone and was crushed when they turned out to have feet of clay. Eddie had been around enough shady businesses to know Jack was right. There was some serious shit running through Doyle's businesses. Matt, poor thing, was clueless. Eddie could easily take advantage of him, but he liked him well enough he didn't want to.
Hey, man, Eddie said. I can take over for you.
Matt didn't look up, but smiled.
Almost done. Where have you been? Or should I ask?
You can ask, but I might not tell.
Matt shook his head.
You might as well give up there, buddy. You are way too much like Ellie's ex-husband to get anywhere.
No kidding,
Eddie said, surprised. Sure, he'd heard snippets about Jinx Martin, but never that he resembled Ellie's ex-husband. It explained why Eddie couldn't prize such a kick-ass woman away from his white-bread, borderline boring brother. It was also a salve to his bruised ego.
Yeah, Matt signed the invoice and gave it to the driver. Thanks, buddy. See you tomorrow.
They started for the office.
What do you mean? I look like him or act like him?
Matt opened the door and let Eddie pass through.
A little bit of both, to be honest. I didn't know him well, but talk about a rounder. I'm surprised she didn't give up man altogether.
Eddie flopped down into a chair. Matt moved around the desk, tossed the clipboard down with a clatter, woke his computer, and started checking email. He didn't have a desk chair because he didn't sit down. Ever. Eddie wondered if he ate dinner standing up.
Eddie crossed his ankle over his knee and picked at a loose thread on his frayed jeans.
You seriously going into business with her at the Henry?
Maybe.
What does your dad think about it?
He doesn't know yet. All my dad cares about are results. Bottom line. If catering to the old-timers in town will get him elected, he'll say what they want to hear. But if Ellie and Jane can make their plan for downtown work, he'll come around.
Hmm, Eddie said.
Matt stared at the screen and clicked through email as he talked, his gold Texas A&M class ring glinting on his right ring finger. So, hey, two things. Michelle needs you over at Heavy Equipment today.
Okay.
And Amy and I are having a bonfire out at the lake on Saturday night. On the lot we're going to build our new house on. Thought you might want to come.
Sure.
Bring Ellie. Amy invited her this morning. I think she's trying to play matchmaker with you two.
Is she?
Yeah. I told her to back off, but she's a big fan of yours for some reason.
It's the long hair and motorcycle. Chicks dig it.
Like my sister? Eddie paused.
You know about that?
I knew my sister would set her sights on you as soon as you walked into my office. Matt shook his head, disappointment clear in his expression. Be careful there, Eddie.
What do you mean?
I don't trust my sister as far as I can throw her, and neither should you. Eddie walked up the stairs of the business office and down the hall toward the only light in the building. He knocked on the open door. Red yard signs with Joe Doyle's City Council in blue letters were leaned against every available inch of wall space. A big box of Vote for Joe buttons were on the edge of Michelle's desk. Michelle, reading glasses perched on the end of her nose, looked up from her computer screen. She closed the laptop, took off her glasses, and put them on the desk.
You're late.
Eddie sauntered over.
Don't take the glasses off on my account. I like them.
He sat on the corner of the desk, picked up the glasses, and put them back on Michelle. Eddie studied Michelle. He knew within a week of working at Doyle Industries, she was in charge. Joe Doyle might bluster around and take credit for everything, but Michelle Ryan was the brains behind the legitimate business. 2 weeks in, Eddie was fucking her. 3 weeks in, he knew she was also the brains behind the illegitimate business. Now they were poking and prodding each other, testing the limits of their trust in each other. Eddie felt sure he'd won her over. At the very least, she'd hesitate before ordering someone to kill him.
Where have you been?
He knew lying to Michelle wouldn't get him what he wanted.
I was with Ellie.
Are you fucking her yet?
Michelle's voice was bland. Her gaze was too deliberate and even, as if beating her insecurities down with a hammer.
Why do you care?
Michelle stood and walked to the coffee maker on the sideboard. She poured 2 cups of coffee, picked 1 cup up, and leaned against the credenza.
I'm curious what you think. She couldn't hold her first husband's interest. Jinx said it was like fucking an ice cube.
Eddie chuckled, walked over, and picked up his cup.
Maybe the problem was him.
Nope. Jinx knew what he was doing.
What kind of name is Jinx?
A perfect one for him.
Ellie told me your part in her divorce.
Michelle scoffed.
No doubt saying I ruined her life.
She shook her head.
She hates me so much, she can't see I did her a favor.
You were fucking her husband.
I was, and I enjoyed every minute of it. Everyone knew they were trying to get pregnant. One night, Jinx had too much to drink. He did that a lot. And he let slip he'd had a vasectomy. Laughed his ass off at Ellie.
Michelle sipped her coffee and stared into space.
I've hated Ellie York since I was 12 years old, and will probably always hate her.
Michelle met Eddie's eyes.
But to fuck with a woman like that? Bastard. So I told her.
Michelle's eyes were a beautiful blue, almost violet, and completely clear. No doubt, no remorse, no guilt, no indecision. Eddie pushed the glasses up and said,
Matt says I remind him of Jinx.
At first, yeah. But if you were anything like Jinx Martin, I wouldn't have brought you in.
Eddie leaned forward.
You think I'm trustworthy?
Michelle's eyes settled on Eddie's lips.
You haven't betrayed me yet.
And if I did?
He inched forward to kiss her.
I'd cut your dick off and feed it to a wild hog while you watched.
Eddie stopped and leaned back until Michelle's face came into focus. Her eyes didn't waver. Her mouth didn't crack into a smile.
Jesus.
She pulled a set of keys from her pocket and slapped them into Eddie's hand.
There's a Mack truck out back with a backhoe on it. I need you to deliver it to Houston.
Houston?
The address is in the cab. You'll pick up a different one and bring it back here. By tonight.
She walked to her desk and pulled a burner phone from the top drawer.
That's a 10-hour round trip, at least.
Then you better get going.
She tossed the phone to him. With one hand holding a coffee and the other with keys, he barely caught it.
Use this to do your civic duty and call in your hot tip. Toss it out the window on 45 when you're done.
Eddie stared at the phone.
Are you sure about this?
Yes.
Dread settled onto his shoulders.
You don't need to do it, you know. Joe's going to win.
I do, if for no other reason than to prove you're trustworthy to your doubters.
Who are my doubters?
All you need to worry about is what I think of you.
Do you trust me?
Finish the job and I will. 100%.
Chapter 8. The tan uniforms and neutral walls gave the conference room at the York County Sheriff's Office an old-fashioned sepia tone. The lone nod to modernity were the cell phones held in a few hands and Jack McBride, who preferred Navy Hugo Boss to tan Dickies.
Still aren't wearing the uniform, I see.
Yorkville Chief of Police Harvey Dodd said it with a smile, but Jack saw the animosity beneath the good old boy exterior. Tan isn't my color, Jack said.
You should at least wear a vest,
Lone Oak Officer Tammy Cole said. You're right, but it'll mess up the line of my suit. Cole saw it for the joke it was. Dodd turned away in disgust. Jack held out his hand to the man standing next to Cole.
Hayes, good to see you.
McBride?
Eric Hayes was a cop from Central Casting, stocky with a crew cut and mustache. On the other hand, Tammy Cole, a lifelong York County resident, looked like she was more at home on a horse than in a car. She was wide-hipped and bow-legged, with long brown hair pulled into a ponytail and a row of tightly curled bangs covering her tall forehead. Sheriff Ann Newberry walked into the room, followed by District Attorney Oliver Pigeon.
Okay, let's get this started. Crime Stoppers will be here in 30 minutes to talk about their public outreach program. Then the vultures descend.
Ann moved to the head of the table and sat down.
You invited the press? Dodd said.
Yep. The public needs to see what we're doing to address the drug problem in our county. McBride, why don't you fill everyone in on what you found out from the DEA?
Where is the DEA agent?
Dodd said.
Couldn't make it.
Jack moved on, not wanting to get into the age-old animosity between local and federal law enforcement. Since the murder of Rosa and Gilberto Ramos, the incidence of drug crimes has risen 50% in York County, 300% in Stillwater alone. The biggest problem has been the influx of heroin, especially in the high schools, as evidenced by the two ODs over in Yorkville. Lucky they didn't die.
They might as well have, Dodd said.
Everyone around the table nodded, thinking of the two Yorkville High School high-achieving seniors who were unlucky enough to have dirty heroin as their first hit and had become vegetables as a result. With the exception of a few fights and the explosion of the meth lab out your way, Hayes, the crimes have been nonviolent. Thefts, possession with intent to deliver, bike batchers.
We've heard through the grapevine meth labs throughout the county are being destroyed, but of course no one's going to report the destruction of an illegal drug lab. Still, it would fit in with the theory there's a turf war going on right now between the local organization and the Pedrosa cartel, with the locals trying to protect their meth trade and the Pedrosas importing heroin. The Pedrosas are good, though. We haven't been able to catch a dealer yet.
If the Pedrosas are involved, we're lucky no one has ended up in the county square holding their severed heads in their laps, Hayes said.
True, Jack said. We might yet. Jack passed out photos of the torched house and two charred bodies. Two men were found in a fire out on 107 yesterday. We believe one of them is Paco Morales. Morales has lived legally in Stillwater for nearly 30 years. He did odd jobs for years before going to work full-time as a groundskeeper at Stillwater Country Club. No arrests, though considering Pollard didn't arrest anyone for anything, it's not surprising. Dodd scoffed, but Jack continued. So, clean on the surface. His daughter is Esperanza Perez, who was Diego Vasquez's alibi for the night Gilberto and Rosa Ramos were killed. He was low level with the Pedrosa cartel, or at least the DEA thought when he came to them. Turns out Vasquez was playing the DEA. They aren't sure how high up Vasquez is, but it looks like he's Pedrosa's frontman in York County.
And no one can find him, Hayes said.
Not yet, Ann replied.
Probably being hidden by the Hispanic community, Cole said.
Maybe being hidden by Paco Morales, Hayes said.
Maybe.
Ann stared at the photo of the charred bodies as she asked,
You think the other body is Diego Vasquez?
If it is, we have to worry about retaliation.
Bodies in the square, Cole said.
Against who?
Dodd asked. Jack glanced at Ann, who nodded. Doyle Industries. Jack and Ann waited for the indignant reaction they anticipated. Instead, Dodd, Hayes, and Cole remained silent, contemplating the information. Dodd was the first to speak.
There were rumors of Doyle being in the trade back in the 80s, but it died out when the business park took off. I figured he made a wad selling weed, then went legit.
They would have the infrastructure to do it, Eric Hayes said. Between their businesses, they're all over the county.
The DEA has had them in their sights for a while now. In the course of his work with the DEA, Jack said, Vasquez gave up Pollard. Told them Pollard had been running drugs for Doyle.
Now there I draw the line. I've known Pollard for 50 years, Dodd said. No way he would run drugs.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that, too,
Tammy Cole said.
Pollard might protect the organization, but to actually run the drugs?
Hayes clicked his tongue.
It's a stretch.
We have proof. Jack pulled out stapled photocopies and handed them out to his counterparts. District Attorney Pigeon spoke for the first time. The melodious voice that had lulled many juries into trusting him had sung newlyweds into their future and corpses into their graves, filled every corner of the room.
6 weeks ago, we received compelling evidence against Pollard for corruption. Judge Brockman signed the warrant to search Pollard's house. Under the house, we found boxes of journals written in Pollard's hand, dating back to the 60s. In the storm cellar, we found filing cabinets full of documents we thought were lost in the fire back in the 60s.
We've been copying the journals for the last 6 weeks, Ann said. We finished yesterday. The originals went to the feds and the copies are in the evidence locker.
Dodd, Hayes, and Cole flipped through their amended copies. Sweat beaded at Dodd's temples. He leaned forward.
What else is in those journals?
Somewhere along the line, Pollard got smart and started using code for names. The latter journals are cryptic, Jack said. Dodd sat back, trying not to look too relieved. But not before he mentioned catching Michelle Doyle selling weed in 1985. So you were right, Dodd.
To a point, Ann said. Doyle's legitimate businesses were a cover for the drugs. With Pollard's protection, Doyle was able to build up an almost bulletproof organization.
Which brings us back to Vasquez, Jack said. The DEA turned him, he gave up Pollard, and the DEA and FBI started investigating. The start of their investigation coincides with Pollard's resignation.
If Pollard was protecting drug dealers, you would think the cartel would want him in power,
Cole said. Yes, but he was protecting the cartel's competition. The DEA theorizes the Pedrosas planted Vasquez with the DEA to get them investigating the local drug organization and dismantle it so they could move in unopposed.
Jesus, Hayes said.
They sent Vasquez here to shake up the status quo. So far, the Pedrosas have shown surprising restraint, though, focusing on hamstringing the drug organization and keeping the body count at zero. If it's Paco Morales and Diego Vasquez's bodies in that house, who knows what they'll do.
Which is why we have to keep this theory about their identity right here in this room,
Anne said.
We don't want innocent people to get murdered based on a theory.
If they're involved in the drug trade, are they really innocent? Hayes asked.
Why have you kept all of this from us?
Dodd said.
We don't think Pollard's dead, Anne said. With his contacts, it would have been easy enough for him to fake his accident. We figured if he thought we didn't have anything on him, he'd return.
And what does any of this have to do with the drug task force?
Hayes asked.
We bring down the drug organization in York County, Doyle. They give us Pollard,
D.A. Pigeon said.
So we take down the local organization, the largest employer in the county, by the way, basically doing the job for the Pedrosas so they can move in,
Hayes asked, voice full of incredulity.
And we turn our focus to them, Pigeon said.
Where the hell is the DEA?
Cole said. Trust me, they're as dedicated to this as we are, Jack said. They have... Jack stopped as DEA agent Tom Hunter's words came back to him. We've got someone inside. Close. Jack's blood rushed to his head. He put his hands on the table to steady himself.
Jack?
Anne asked. They have been working on this for months with the FBI, like I said. They're about to drop a warrant on them for financials.
When?
Jack shrugged. They didn't say. When Jack balked at Hunter keeping mum on the when, Hunter said flat out that he was the only law enforcement officer in York County the feds trusted.
In the meantime, Anne said, we keep doing what we've been doing, but keep an eye out for Doyle's rigs. If they drive even 1 mile per hour over the limit, stop them and pray there's a legitimate reason to search the vehicle.
Whatever you do, have cause. We don't want anything we find to be tossed, Jack said.
And we don't want Doyle to cotton on that we're investigating, Pigeon said. We've kept it quiet for 6 weeks. If the Doyles somehow catch wind, we'll know where it comes from.
Any questions?
Everyone shook their heads and Anne continued.
Good. Now, Cole, update us on your neck of the woods.
Tammy Cole flipped the stapled copies closed and pushed it aside.
2 drug arrests, both for small amounts of weed. Teenagers. Neither good candidates for CIs.
We're pleading those kids out, Pigeon said. Not worth the cost of going to trial. Probation, drug education classes.
I'm sure y'all heard about the meth lab set up in the empty lake house. The lab hasn't gotten around to the prints yet, so no news. I'm trying to stop by the weekend houses to check them for labs, but it's slow going. I could use some help.
We'll help out, Jack said. I'll put Bishop on it. Have him patrol out there.
We should all be out there except you, Hayes. That's out of your way, Anne said.
We'll patrol out there, too, Dodd said. Let's get together after and divvy it up so we don't miss anything.
Sounds good, Jack said.
Thanks, Cole said. Also, seems like the high schoolers have remembered Cheney's Field.
Ah, yes, Cheney's Field,
Hayes said, a gleam in his eyes.
What's Cheney's Field?
Jack said.
Pasture out near the lake that's been used for parties since I was a teenager,
Dodd said.
About halfway between Yorkville and Stillwater, so it pulls kids from both towns.
It'll be real popular for a time, then they'll get busted and move on. They always come back eventually, Hayes said.
Haven't caught any out there yet, but they're leaving plenty of trash. I'm going to catch them tomorrow night, Cole said.
There was a knock on the door. Anne rose and went to open it. Ellie stood in the hall holding a briefcase.
Am I early? No, you're fine, Anne said. Have a seat.
Jack gathered the pictures of the charred bodies from the table together and shoved them in his folder. Ellie took the first available chair at the far end of the table. She smiled a greeting to the table in general and avoided Jack's eyes, focusing completely on Anne.
Ellie, you have a house out at the lake, Anne said. Have you noticed anything out of the ordinary?
She leaned forward and folded her hands together. Like the night before, images of his time with Ellie in her lake house flooded Jack's mind. The last time he touched her, kissed her, felt her beneath him. He focused on the pen in his hands, hoping his face didn't betray the riot of emotions blazing through him, and wondered if Ellie was thinking the same thing, and if so, how she was so composed.
I don't go out there much, so no, Ellie said. I haven't seen anything. No increased activity? Vandalism? Well, some kids are using my mailbox for batting practice, but other than that, no. Why? We think cookers are setting up meth labs in abandoned houses, doing their thing, and moving on. I'll swing by and check my house on the way home.
No, Jack said. Everyone stared at him. Ellie's face turned beet red. Let one of us check it in case someone's there cooking.
He's right, Dodd said. Let us check it out.
Ellie shrugged.
So, Ellie,
Anne smiled at her.
Thanks for joining us. Can you update us on your end?
Sure. Crime Stoppers has arranged for a former drug addict to speak to the high schools and middle schools. Give his testimony. First assembly is next week in Yorkville. We're also working with the churches to start Narcotics Anonymous meetings. The DA,
she nodded at Pigeon,
is making drug counseling part of the plea bargains. We're also meeting with the hospitals and local doctors to get their assistance. Sue Poole planned to come with me today but had an emergency C-section.
Anne nodded, made a note.
What do you need from us?
We wanted to get an officer from each community to speak to the elementary schools.
Excellent idea, Anne said. I'll have my secretary get in touch with you. She'll organize it with the local police.
Great, Ellie said.
She reached down into her briefcase and removed a manila folder. She passed out a packet of information and said,
I put together a detailed outline of what we're doing on our end, as well as suggestions for the future. For your reference. If there's something I've missed, let me know and I'll take it to the Crime Stoppers board. We are all enthusiastic about helping out.
Thanks, Ellie, Hayes said. This looks great. Let me know whenever you need me to speak to a school. Or anything.
Hayes's ingratiating grin raised Jack's hackles. He was flirting with her. Ellie returned Hayes's smile, too enthusiastically for Jack's taste.
Thanks, Eric. For ease of organization, we'll have it all go through the sheriff's department. Myrna will coordinate with you, Anne said.
Whatever's easiest. I've also put together a press release. Sorry, but I can't stay to talk to the press. I have an appointment.
She stood.
Of course. Thanks for taking the time to come, Anne said.
Jack watched the door close behind Ellie. Anne started speaking and Jack's phone buzzed. He pulled it out of his pocket and saw Julie's number pop up. He stood and interrupted Anne. I'm sorry, I have to take this. He left the room. Outside the door, he punched the decline button on his phone and stopped cold. Reporters for every local newspaper in the county and one from Tyler waited in the hall. They looked up from their phones and tablets, as surprised by Jack's arrival as he was by their presence.
Is it time for us?
The Tyler reporter said, standing. Not yet. Excuse me. Jack walked quickly out the front door. From the top of the courthouse steps, Jack saw Ellie getting in her car. Ellie! He called, running down the stairs and across the street. She paused, halfway in the car.
Jack?
He stopped at her door, slightly out of breath,
but not from the short jog. God, she looked great. A little thin, but those eyes, and that voice. Jack felt better than he had in weeks, just standing near her. Her confusion turned to realization.
You didn't just leave.
She pressed her lips together. No, I got a call. I ignored it. I wanted to talk to you.
About what?
A slight breeze ruffled her hair. A few strands fell softly across her face. You were about to tell me something last night. She brushed her hair out of her face, tucked it behind her ear, and turned her head away.
It must not have been important. I don't remember.
She fell silent, but didn't seem eager to leave. Jack stepped forward. I miss you.
Please don't do this. We agreed.
You're right. We did. Worst decision of my life.
No. We did the right thing.
Right for who? Not me, not you.
For Ethan.
Jack looked away and thought of his son. Was it right for Ethan? Jack wasn't so sure. At first, Ethan had been ecstatic. His parents were back together, he had friends, and he was settling into Stillwater. But recently, Ethan had become more subdued, watching Jack with a mixture of amazement and disbelief each morning at breakfast and evening at dinner. Jack tried with every fiber of his being to act normal, hoping Ethan believed he was truly trying to make his marriage work, while guilt-ridden at living the lie of a happy family. How would Ethan react if he ever found out about the ruse, that he had no intention of staying with Julie? He feared it would irrevocably tarnish their relationship, more than going through with the divorce when Julie returned would have. Julie, though, wasn't convinced. When Jack slept at home, he bunked on the downstairs couch, sure to wake up early enough to banish any sign before Ethan woke up. Mostly, though, he left the house after Ethan went to sleep and returned before he woke. Jack knew his avoidance of sleeping with Julie again was raising her suspicions about another woman, but he couldn't bring himself to do the one thing that would banish them. Whenever he thought of making love to a woman, he envisioned Ellie. Do you miss me as much as I miss you? She didn't answer for what seemed like an eternity. Finally, in a quiet voice Jack almost couldn't hear, she answered,
No.
Chapter 9. Ellie spent the 10-mile drive back to Stillwater alternately banging on the steering wheel and wiping tears from her cheeks, while a string of increasingly creative expletives streamed from her mouth. God, men were worthless. Why was it always the women who have to be so strong? Fuck! She banged her hand on the steering wheel again. This time, it tingled painfully up her wrist to her arm.
Great, just great. So, Ellie, how did you hurt your wrist? Oh, you know, banging my fucking steering wheel over a goddamn man.
She inhaled through her nose and exhaled through her mouth a few times.
Get a grip, Elliot.
She turned into a driveway almost obscured by trees, wild roses, and blackberry bushes. A crooked post stood at the end, a dented mailbox on the ground a few feet away. She stopped the car and got out.
Fucking kids.
She didn't know why she kept fixing it. No one lived here anymore, and the post office knew to forward the mail to her. Still, she picked up the mailbox and put it in her back seat before driving on. The road wound through a tunnel of trees, the sight of their golden and red leaves soothing her fevered brain, before ending in front of an A-frame house. Trees dwarfed the house, so sunlight rarely broke through, making it a perfect retreat during the long, hot Texas summers. Lake York spread out behind the house, down 15 feet from the long drought, but calm on this cool November morning. She turned off the car and let her hands drop from the steering wheel. She closed her eyes. Jack's face floated before her, sad, strained, and pathetic. She jerked the car door open, got out, and walked around the house and down to the end of the pier.
The lake was empty other than a small boat far across in a small cove known for catfish. The boat moved a bit and stopped. Moved and stopped. Checking a trot line, no doubt. The house loomed behind her, full of memories she would rather not confront. That was a lie. If she didn't want to wallow in the memory, she wouldn't have turned off the highway. When she and Jack said goodbye on that sultry September night, she was full of hope. He loved her, and 4 months wasn't long to wait. But as the weeks dragged on, doubts crept in. They had known each other for 7 days, for Christ's sake. They'd never been on a date, eaten dinner together, watched a movie, debated politics, argued. There was the real chance when they did fall into a normal relationship, they would realize they weren't compatible. Or Jack would discover the flaw in Ellie that seemed to repel men, to make it easy to betray and hurt her. Either way, there was an even chance all of this drama would be for nothing, the relationship wouldn't last, and she would be alone again. Best to move on. She had thrown herself into her business, the redevelopment of downtown Stillwater, and her campaign. Work and focus had gotten her through every other challenge in her life. Jack McBride would be no different. But who was she kidding? She couldn't move on or forget. The memory of their last night together hadn't consoled her. It had tormented her. The knowledge that happiness had been right there in her grasp, the kind of happiness fairy tales sell you, the kind that normal people don't really believe in but damn they would like to, had been one word away from being a reality. Instead, it was torpedoed by her fucking sense of right and wrong, by her concern for a 14-year-old boy who would hate her no matter what she did, by her knowledge that if she and Jack did the selfish thing, the thing that would make them happy, the fallout would only make them miserable in the end. So she did what she always did. Controlled what she ate, when she ate at all. Pushed herself every morning to run faster and farther. Drank more than normal. Let Jane Maxwell talk her into running for a city council seat she didn't want. At least she hadn't slept with Eddie, though she'd been sorely tempted to, especially on the nights the vision of Jack making love to Julie kept her from sleep. Instead, she went to Dallas one Saturday night and looked up an occasional lover she knew would be willing and whose only question would be, "How can I make you feel good?" Control was the key. Anytime she'd allowed her control to slip, this happened. And fucking shocker, it always involved a man. Daddy issues. Huh. How fucking stereotypical could you get? Ellie turned to face the house. She wasn't there to confront her memories. She was there because she didn't want to be told what to do by anyone. Especially a man. Especially Jack McBride. She walked up the stairs to the deck and stopped. The glass sliding door was open a few inches. She knew she hadn't left it open last time she was here.
"So, how was Ellie murdered, Chief McBride?" Ellie said quietly in her best reporter voice.
Ellie lowered her voice in an impersonation of Jack.
"She specifically disobeyed my completely reasonable professional suggestion to let the authorities handle it."
Ellie crept toward the door.
"So she was hard-headed? You have no idea."
The sheer curtains covering the sliding glass door blew gently in the breeze. When she touched the handle, she remembered a conversation she'd had with Susan and Kelly over wine once about how stupid horror movie characters were. "Why do they always walk through the door? Just fucking run away," they all said, falling over in laughter.
Here she was, walking straight into a stereotypical horror movie scenario.
At least I haven't just had sex. I'd be a goner for sure.
She opened the door. Enough light filtered through the sheer curtains to show Ellie she was alone. Instinctively, she pulled out her phone and called Jack. He answered in the middle of the first ring. "Ellie?" Hope laced his voice.
"Jack, there's a meth lab in my kitchen."
Ellie leaned against her car outside the crime scene tape strung from tree to tree, 20 feet from the house. Jack, Ann, and Tammy Cole ducked under the tape and walked to her. Ellie straightened to meet them.
"Well," Ann said, "the good news is they hadn't started cooking yet. Just set it up."
"We told you not to come out here." Anger laced Jack's voice. Ellie crossed her arms and glared at him. Could he be any more obvious that his feelings about her actions weren't professional, but personal? She wanted to punch him in the chest, or maybe slap him, but knew it would be left up to her to deflect suspicion.
"I'm sorry," she said in as contrite a voice as possible. "It was on my way. I wasn't thinking, I guess."
"Did you see anyone around the house or on the road in?"
Tammy Cole said.
"Not after I got off the highway."
Ann pulled her phone out and held it up to Ellie. A phone number was highlighted in a text message.
"Recognize this number?"
"No. Why?"
"About the time you called Jack, 911 got a call about suspicious behavior out here at your house. From this number."
"I'm pretty sure no one saw me. I know I didn't see anyone."
"Maybe you were distracted?"
Tammy said.
"Maybe,"
Ellie said.
"When was the last time you were out here?"
Ann asked.
"A couple weeks ago."
"I thought you said you didn't come out here much,"
Tammy said.
"I don't. Maybe it was like 4 or 5.
"Were you out here alone?"
"No."
Ellie paused. She felt Jack's gaze. Lied.
"Sometimes I come out here with my friends, drink wine, visit."
"We're going to need the names of who's been out here, to account for their fingerprints."
"Okay."
Ann took out a small notebook and pen.
"Now?"
Ellie asked.
"If there aren't many."
"Kelly Kendrick, Susan Grant, Barbara Dodsworth cleans it every month. I can call her and get the names of which maids cleaned it last."
"We can do that."
She looked up.
"Anyone else?"
Ellie looked at Jack and was about to speak when he said, "Me." Tammy Cole rested her hands on her gun belt, shifted a bit on her feet, and looked away. Ann Newberry didn't say anything for a moment. Ellie closed her eyes, looked away, and shook her head. The sheriff flipped her notebook closed and pocketed it.
"Okay, then. You can go. I'll be in touch with you later. Cole, want to take a look at this?"
Ann nodded toward the house.
"Sure,"
Tammy replied and followed. Ellie turned away and cursed under her breath. "It's fine. Ann and Cole won't say anything," Jack said. She turned back to Jack, her face burning with anger.
"Why did you say anything?"
"They were going to figure out as soon—"
"No, they wouldn't have. The house has been clean since you've been here."
"There would have been a print."
"I doubt they're going to dust the bedroom."
"I wasn't only in the bedroom, now was I?"
"Why are you so angry?
When you looked at me, I assumed—"
"Well, you were wrong."
She jerked open the car door and got in. Before she could close it, Jack grabbed the door. "Whose prints are they going to find?"
"Eddie's."
Jack's face hardened. "What are Eddie's prints doing out here?" All the anger at Jack from earlier came rushing back.
"What do you think?"
Jack's face turned red. "Eddie wouldn't betray me."
"But I would."
Jack opened his mouth but closed it.
"He wasn't sure." "Fucking perfect." Ellie laughed. "Trust me. Your brother's been trying like hell to betray you since the moment he rode into town."
"I don't believe you."
"Why would I lie?"
Jack remained silent. Ellie started her car and tried to shut the door. Jack held on.
"Are you fucking my brother?"
he said, as though he couldn't believe he was asking the question.
"No, but I'm pretty sure your wife has."
She yanked the door from Jack's grip, slammed it in his face, and drove off.
Chapter 10. The last 100 miles, Eddie struggled to keep his eyes open. All day he'd been fighting a crosswind, battling to keep his rig on the interstate. Because of the weight of the load, he couldn't drive over 55 miles per hour, and that fast only rarely. His arms were like jelly, and he was exhausted. He stopped for some stale coffee in Athens at 10 p.m., turned up the radio, and forced himself to keep going. The thought of his bed sustained him. He turned into Doyle Industries' truck yard at nearly 1 a.m. Kyle Grant and a large bald man that might as well have had a swastika tattooed on his forehead walked out of the truck barn to meet him. Before Eddie could turn the rig off, Grant opened the driver's side door.
"Leave it running," he said. "You need me to park it somewhere?"
"No, we got it." Eddie feigned disinterest and gathered his trash from the cab.
"Don't worry about it," Kyle said.
Eddie shrugged and tossed the trash in the passenger seat.
"Suit yourself."
He climbed out of the cab.
"Where you been, Kyle? Haven't seen you around much lately."
Kyle wore short-sleeved blue Dickies coveralls. The long sleeves of his undershirt were pushed halfway up his forearms, revealing an elaborate tattoo that Eddie knew ran up his left arm, across his shoulder, and ended on his neck, peeking out of the collar of his overalls.
"We'll take it from here," Kyle replied, ignoring Eddie's question. "Don't take this the wrong way, but no one told me you'd be out here to meet me. I don't feel comfortable handing my load to you without confirmation."
Kyle's face clouded. Eddie held his gaze, but saw Kyle clench his fists while he considered how to respond. Kyle sneered and huffed, but pulled out his phone and dialed a number.
"Yeah, just drove in. He wants to talk to you,"
he said, as if talking about a 5-year-old.
"Hello?" Eddie said.
"Is there a problem?" Michelle said.
"I wasn't told they'd be here to meet me."
"Kyle's worked for me a hell of a lot longer than you have."
"You sure he's only working for you?"
Eddie pointedly stared at Kyle's tattoo before moving his gaze to Kyle's face. He combated his adversary's anger with a wink and a grin.
"Eddie, don't be an idiot. You've done your part. Go home. Get some rest. Tomorrow is a long day."
"How so?"
"It's the Snipe Festival. Sidewalk sale. Ellie and my dad will be kissing babies and telling lies. Don't tell me your girlfriend hasn't enlisted your help in campaigning."
"She's not my girlfriend."
"Uh-huh. Matt said he invited you two to the bonfire. You coming?"
"Are you?"
"Yes."
"Then so am I."
Michelle chuckled.
"Put Kyle back on."
Eddie handed the phone off and walked away, as if uninterested. But he managed to hear Kyle Grant say,
"I'm still working on it. I don't have them on speed dial, you know."
He drove to the Chevron, gassed up his bike, and ambled past Abe's vintage green and white 1969 Ford on his way inside. Eddie'd been considering trading in the Harley. He still loved it, but it was inconveniently loud and conspicuous. Not necessarily good things in his line of work.
"Hey, Abe. Eddie?"
Eddie walked to the cooler and pulled out a pint of chocolate milk. On the way to the register, he grabbed a honey bun.
"Tell me, Abe, do you ever sleep?"
Abe rang Eddie up.
"Not much. What is it with you McBride men and honey buns?"
Eddie laughed, thought back to all the honey buns they'd eaten growing up. They should probably hate them, but both still loved them. Eddie was partial to the frosted tops, and Jack liked his plain. They each gave the other a case for Christmas every year as a joke, but by February they were gone.
"Breakfast of champions, Abe. Breakfast of champions. Tell me, is your truck for sale?"
Abe shook his head.
Seems a shame for that beauty to sit in the parking lot all day.
This way I can look at her.
How about a trade? Straight up. My bike for your truck.
Abe looked out the front window at Eddie's Harley.
I'd have to ride it.
Eddie peeled the wrapper from the sticky honey bun and took a bite.
How about we trade for a couple days? Drive and ride and see what we think.
Abe contemplated Eddie's bike for a few moments more and nodded his head.
Sure, sounds good.
Great, I'll pull the bike up.
He made the switch, climbed into the truck, and fell in love. It drove as good as it looked. He drove out of the Chevron.